Welcome to the REORC Primary View, where we cover the latest developments in high yield, distressed debt, and bankruptcy, and feature discussions on issues affecting distressed debt, leverage finance, direct lending, high yield bonds, high yield municipals, covenants, private credit, middle market companies. I'm David Zupkis. This week, Tom Shandell, head of U.S. Broadly Syndicated Loans and CLOs at Investcorp Credit Management, joins REORC's Hugh Minch to discuss CCC concentrations in CLO portfolios following the Altice France downgrade. Shandell discusses which CLOs risk failing an over-collateralization test this quarter and shares his views on which other credits are concerns amid a rise in lender-on-lender violence and workout situations. And as always, we bring you our weekly summary of interesting developments in the restructuring world, as well as a preview of what's on tap for next week. We'd love to hear your feedback to help us improve the podcast experience, so please take a moment to complete the short survey at the link attached to this podcast and let us know how we're doing. It's Monday, April 8th.
Hello and welcome to the REORC Primary View. CLOs delivered strong returns in the first quarter of this year, but the downgrade of one of the largest portfolio credits to CCC in late March has put fundamental risk in the underlying collateral back in the headlines. Moody's downgraded Altice France on March 27th, followed in short order by S&P, with the downgrades coming just a week before most CLOs determine their April payments. The rating action is likely to increase the number of CLOs failing an over-collateralization test and therefore diverting equity and payments to repay AAA investors later this month. With me today to discuss the implications of the downgrade and other trends in the CLO space is Tom Shandell, Managing Director and Head of US Broadly Syndicated Loans and CLOs at Investcorp Credit Management. Tom, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Hugh.
So what's your overview on the Altice situation and how big of a problem is it for the US CLO market?
Well, it is a large issue. It's many billions of debt, and it's impacting most CLO managers, both in the U.S. and in Europe. So it certainly has a large impact. The downgrade to CCC at a time when there are other situations in the CLO market that's resulting in downgrades and outright defaults and other hits to par, it comes at a bad time. It also comes at a bad time, you know, because here we are in early April and we're approaching all the cut dates for all the CLOs in our market. There's an interesting expression that, over-collateralization tests really only matter four times a year, but we're right in that time period. So, you know, when you have an issue like Altice that is very large, that's owned by most managers, and quite frankly, you know, it's been, you know, a relatively stable credit over its history, so that managers who own it tend to own it in reasonable size. The downgrade comes at a bad time. Now, is it horrific for the CLO market? No, it's not horrific. Many of the newest CLOs have plenty of OC cushion. A downgrade to CCC and an increase in you know, any excess CCC calculation for managers if they're in an excess CCC situation, it's going to have an impact, but it's not going to have an impact on those newer CLOs that have plenty of cushion. So it really has an impact on older CLOs, on CLOs that are past their reinvestment period. And quite frankly, CLOs that are past their reinvestment period tend to have larger weightings on average, just because it gets more and more difficult to find assets that fit the parameters that are required in a post-RP CLO. What does this really mean? It means that maybe some older CLOs, post-RP CLOs, are going to have, you know, a haircut or a larger haircut because of excess CCC, and that might impact the equity distributions, and that might impact the deferral of subordinated management fees. But is it going to cause any CLOs to have, you know, issues that are more significant than perhaps reduced equity distributions and deferral of fees? No. So it's not catastrophic, but obviously it has an impact.
What trading activity are you seeing around Altice loans and CCC loans more generally this week? Presumably, there are a lot of managers out there that are taking steps to avoid tripping an OC test if they're close to doing so.
Yeah, very true. I think that certainly when the news on Altice came out, when Patrick Drahi, disclosed on an earnings call that the asset sale proceeds were going to be, in our words, held hostage as bait, if you will, trying to get holders of the Altice loans to compromise and take discounts in an exchange for their existing holdings. There was a lot of volume at that time. Then things, it's interesting to watch the trading of the loan because, the first reaction of managers is sell. The B14s, which are the longest maturity loan in the capital structure, they traded off, many points from the low 90s into the 80s, down into the low 80s. Today, it's in the mid 70s as a comparison. But after the initial news, those loans bounced back, not back to the low 90s, but several points higher. And then the downgrade came, and that was the second ball to drop, if you will. And there was another, price drop into that mid-70s that I mentioned. So with the events, that's when the trading really took place. So you saw a lot of volume when the announcement was made by Drahi. You saw a lot of volume when the downgrade came. Now I think it's, not nearly as pronounced trading in the Altice structure. But to your point, as we approach the cut dates, managers are going to try and do what they can if it's a manageable situation. In other words, if they have a CLO where the OC now is significantly lower and that CLO doesn't really stand a chance of being able to come into compliance, managers won't trade triple C loans in that CLO because it's not worth it. And if you're selling triple C loans, chances are it's not at par. So you're going to take a hit if you're going to sell even a high dollar price triple C loan. But when CLOs are close to being able to pass their OC test, that's when you'll see trading in other triple C's. And as I just mentioned, it's typically in high dollar priced triple C assets. So you might see trading in, certainly you'll see it in mid 90s quoted triple C's and also to a lesser extent, low 90s dollar triple C's. But when you get to a loan that's quoted in the 80s, it becomes more problematic because that hit to value, that hit to par and value are hard to make up. So I think as, we're sort of in the middle of the cut dates, if you will. I mean, every CLO has its own cut date. They started, in early April, as early as April 1, maybe some even the end of March. You have some that are taking place today, tomorrow, next week, early next week. So as we're passing cut dates for many CLOs, you're seeing that volume trail off because it's too late at this point. But I do think that when the downgrade news first came out, you saw a lot of activity in high dollar price triple C's. One notable loan, Global Medical Response, sometimes also known as Air Medical, which was quoted in the mid 90s. There were sellers of that. And of course that pushed the price down. And then all of a sudden managers said, okay, well, we're not going to chase that lower.
Yes, I'm thinking back to summer 2020 when this was the last time the issue of triple C downgrades was top of mind and it was even more acute than it is today, of course. Some equity investors would prefer managers to fail the test rather than sell assets at discounted prices in many cases. If you've got a CLO that's failing an OC test, but it can be rectified by selling some of the triple C's, when might it make sense to fail the test instead?
Well, a couple of thoughts about that. So if you're failing your OC, it doesn't mean that all of the equity and the subordinated management fee, all the equity distributions and the management fee will not get paid. It really is based on a pro forma basis. So when that happens, it's going to require that the CLO amortize its triple A's. But by amortizing the triple A's, the ratio changes and you become in compliance again. So if a CLO is failing its OC, but it's really close, and the amortization of the AAAs will put it into compliance again, it makes no sense to sell CCCs to come into compliance, because you're just, again, burning par, burning value for no reason, because you're not cutting off all your equity distribution and you're not necessarily deferring your subordinated management fee. It all depends on the math. And you know, every CLO manager has the ability to calculate that. And managers go through that mathematical calculation to see what makes sense. I think that if you go back to 2020, as you said, it was more intense. Downgrades were coming, you know, every day. You know, the economy was in freefall, obviously, until stimulus could right that ship. And so managers were really doing what they could to stay in compliance, because so many CLOs were falling out of compliance, and you couldn't stand by and watch, you know, a large percentage of your CLOs fail the test and therefore wind up, you know, having significant number of CLOs not paying distributions and not paying fees. Today, it's a different situation. And it's largely, as I mentioned earlier, the older CLOs and the ones that are out of their reinvestment period. And, you know, CLOs are self-correcting mechanisms. They do what they're supposed to do. As the OC test is breached, the equity distribution is used to repay AAAs, putting the CLO back on sides. This happens all the time. You know, the deferred subordinated management fees get paid. So many managers will do a calculation and say, okay, if I let the OC test fail and I amortize my debt, yes, there'll be short-term repercussions, but in the long run, I'll put the CLO in better shape and I'll extend the period of time by which equity distributions will normalize. I'll extend the period of time by which subordinated fees will not be deferred. But also, you know, by curing the OC test, you then are able to actively trade the portfolio again, and you can engage in transactions that will build par. Sometimes a little medicine, you know, is good for the vehicle, and that medicine being the amortization of the debt.
So you mentioned this at the start of this conversation, but a large part of the CLO market is currently out of its reinvestment period. Those deals, as you said, have heightened exposure to CCC loans already. And as well as that, they're restricted from trading. What do you think happens to those transactions going forward?
It's an interesting question. So the word I was struggling for earlier was adverse selection. These post-RP deals wind up having adverse selection. They wind up owning loans that have not been refinanced in a strong market like we're in for loans. You know, healthy borrowers are refinancing their debt and extending their maturities and in many cases reducing their borrowing costs. But the deals that the post-RP CLOs wind up having more of are the loans that either can't or would have great difficulty in refinancing. So what happens to those CLOs, particularly in a market like this, where the loan market in general has been going up and grinding tighter because of the imbalance of loan demand and loan supply, you've seen many BWICs in the marketplace, and many of those BWICs are called CLOs. So particularly when a CLO is not owned in a majority by the manager, but rather owned in majority by third parties, with the rising loan prices in the marketplace, you see more and more of those deals get called because, you know, the NAV makes sense to call it, and it outweighs the cash-on-cash return that an equity CLO investor anticipates. And so to a very large part, you see a lot of those deals being called. Now, when the deals are majority controlled by the manager, you won't necessarily see the deal because there are other factors at play when the manager owns the equity.
So Altice is a French company. The credit is even larger in European CLO portfolios than in US ones. I know it's not your desk, but InvestCorp is a global CLO issuer with a European platform. What are you hearing from your colleagues in Europe about the situation?
Well, I don't want to speak out of turn because, as you said, you know, I don't I don't run the European CLO business for Investcorp, but we obviously chat all the time. We compare notes, and particularly when it's in a cross-border transaction such as Altice. I think they think of it in a very similar way that we do, and they have more intimate knowledge than we have about French creditor rights. You know, the reason why they look at it in a similar way that we do, I mean, it's trading, as I mentioned, in the mid-70s. You know, we do believe that the recovery, the ultimate recovery, is significantly higher than that. So, you know, we and our European colleagues are both holding on to our positions. It's an interesting phenomenon in Europe. Europe is very much a relationship oriented market. The private equity sponsors really interact with the CLO managers and loan market participants when bringing a new transaction to the marketplace. And that relationship, you know, carries through to conversations when a loan, let's say, is going sideways. The typical private equity sponsors want to have relationships with the largest lenders so that they have an easy time when they want to issue a new deal to finance a new buyout. Or maybe easy time is not the right word, but perhaps they want to facilitate the placement of that debt. And likewise, it's a two-way street. So the lenders will interact with the sponsors, you know, throughout the life of a loan, and also, you know, stay on top of the pipeline from that sponsor. Now, the issue with Altice is that Patrick Drahi is not a typical sponsor. He's an individual. He's a wealthy individual. He built a very large company that not only controls, Altice, Numericable is how it trades. One of the largest cable companies in France. It also owns Cablevision here in the United States. And Patrick Drahi put that all together, but it's not a fund. He's not in the business of doing multiple buyouts. And so, you know, the relationship is not the same as, you know, as a CLO manager would have with a private equity sponsor. And so therefore, you know, where typically our European colleagues might think about all of the ramifications of a potential restructuring with, you know, as it relates to the sponsor, here there is no such, you know, thought process, because Drahi's not a sponsor. He's not doing multiple buyouts across multiple industries, you know, many transactions a year. He just has, you know, a global cable franchise. So they're aligned with us, which you know is really that we think the secured debt has a recovery value that's significantly higher than the mid-70s where it's trading. And quite frankly, French restructuring laws are a bit trickier than they are here in the States, and probably in the UK as well. And so the ability to extract discounts from lenders in exchange for perhaps changing the priority of the waterfall embedded in a credit agreement, that is much more difficult under French law. And it's unclear that Altice can actually accomplish this without losing control of the company, which is something Drahi doesn't want. So we're all, you know, my European colleagues and ourselves are, you know, holding the line, because we feel that we have the creditor rights issues on our side.
We've been in a higher interest rate environment for several years now, so these kinds of situations are not unexpected given that economic backdrop. Are there any other large CLO portfolio credits that you have concerns about?
You know, we've seen a significant increase in restructurings in the US, really since the start of the year, maybe you could even say towards the end of 2023. And to your point, you know, there are credits that are challenged business models that, in a much lower interest rate environment, we're able to get leverage buyouts completed. And in many instances, they were able to do it with more leverage than the historical average, which allowed private equity firms to get the projected returns that they were looking for. You know, the stock market is still very strong. Multiples for businesses are still very high. So private equity firms have to pay up to make buyouts happen. And that was fine in 21, you know, and parts of 22, because if you put more leverage on a company, the interest obligation wasn't that onerous because interest rate levels were low. But now, when you think about a 5.25% to 5.5% base rate compared to a 1% to 2% base rate, the absolute level of interest obligations has gone up dramatically. So what you've seen is companies running out of money. And what you've also seen in the US is an increase in you know, what we refer to as lender-on-lender violence. You know, in past times in the levered loan market, you know, the CLO industry was very collegial. You know, it was one for all and all for one. You know, let's make sure that we're all, you know, doing what we're supposed to be doing to get the best credits that we can invest in, the best, which means the best credit agreements that we could get. And even if, you know, credit agreements were lax, we still, you know, all had the same objective in terms of recovery. Well, fast forward to much larger asset management firms that are diversified in terms of strategy. And, you know, all of a sudden it's not so collegial. And you have lenders with different pockets who are willing to do things that'll help help their existing debt position. So what I mean by that is, you know, a large multi-strategy asset management firm could come into a company that was in need of liquidity and say, we can lend you new money to help you with your liquidity problem. But in doing so, we want to make sure that our existing debt is treated better. And, you know, many credit agreements created years ago allow for such treatment. In more recent years, credit agreements have improved. Not that they have maintenance covenants that went away a long time ago, but you know, there are protections in newer credit agreements that are named after situations that took advantage of the loopholes in credit agreements. And so, you know, we refer to J.Crew and Chewy and Serta, which each of those situations, the borrower took advantage of loopholes in the credit agreements. Many credit agreements that were created before those situations still have those loopholes. And so in today's market, you know, large multi-strat managers will come in and do just what I said. And if you're not in the favored group, if you're unable to put up new money, or if you weren't, you know, already negotiating with the ad hoc group or the steering committee or what have you, you could wind up left in the cold and your recovery gets hurt by it. And so we're seeing some interesting times in today's market because there's a lot more lender-on-lender violence, and it has caused the very lower tier of the loan universe to trade off, you know, significantly. So almost unheard of. You know, you have many companies trading in the 40s and the 50s, you know, where in past cycles, you know, if the loan was trading in the 40s or 50s, it was bankrupt. Now there are credits that actually have some amount of liquidity that are, you know, still considered going concerns, but trading in the 40s and 50s. So to answer your question directly, there aren't that many loans out there that really worry us, but there are a number of loans out there that are trading in that $40 to $50 price that, you know, probably, you know, well, let's put it this way. Loans in that zip code either go up or go down. They don't stay there. So a few of those are going to have some real issues. But as a result, and you didn't ask this question, but I think it's a good segue. As a result, you know, I think lenders, participants in the CLO market are more trigger happy than they used to be. So a piece of negative news could come out about a credit, and the credit is fine, and it will trade off just on that news, because many CLO managers would rather, you know, to use a phrase, shoot first, ask questions later. So they'll sell and then figure it out later. So loans that has happened to lately, Asurion. I don't worry about Asurion. It's another incredibly large issue in our marketplace. It's a fantastic company. I don't worry about it, but they came out with news recently that had to do with their inability to deliver their audit on time, and the loans traded off 3 points. Another loan that I think is a good loan and is trading at a level that is not deserving and too cheap is Cox Media. Cox is a broadcast television operator, and it's controlled by Apollo, and they recently sold some assets, and those assets are in an unrestricted subsidiary, and Apollo has communicated that they intend to use proceeds to pay down debt. But the market has uncertainty about it and started trading off the loan. And then the rating agencies jumped on board, and I really scratched my head. I don't know why they did this, but they downgraded it to CCC. Okay, so that loan, which had already traded off several points, now traded off many, many points in addition. And then the company came out with its earnings, and the earnings were as expected, no surprises, but it was too late. The market already decided that the loan deserved to be, you know, down, you know, 8 to 10 points. I do worry about loans that are in that sort of, you know, no man's land, if you will, B3s. Actually, Cox wasn't even a B3, but it got downgraded to CCC. You know, so I think, you know, in this market, everybody worries about B3s and, you know, the potential for that to get downgraded into a CCC, which would cause that loan to trade off many points.
Final question. It's been a very busy start to the year for new CLO issuance, and returns have been strong. But what do you expect to see in the second quarter?
I think you'll see a continuation of that. The year started off with a lot of new issue CLOs because all of a sudden the AAA, the spread on AAAs had come in quite significantly and quite rapidly. To give you an indication of that, we priced a deal in December. Our AAA was 189 over. We priced a deal on February 1, our AAA was 160 over. So when you're talking about 30 basis points of a reduction in AAA costs, you could see where a lot of people would want to issue new CLOs. So we saw that in the beginning of the year. Now what you're seeing is a lot of refinancings and resets because of the new spread environment that we're in. Deals in which it didn't make sense to reset or refinance, all of a sudden it made sense to look at that. And so you've seen a significant increase in resets and refinances. Why did AAAs come in so much? The domestic banks, which had been absent from the marketplace for pretty much all of 23, were able to come back into the marketplace. You mentioned before the significant amount of CLOs outstanding that were exiting their RP, their reinvestment period. And as I mentioned earlier, it becomes more difficult to reinvest in a post-RP deal. So cash builds and AAAs get amortized. So the banks found themselves getting repaid to a significant degree. And their risk managers, determined that it was okay for those banks to reinvest the proceeds that were getting repaid. So now you have, you know, banks once again participating in AAA market, and spreads came down. So if the spreads stay the same, and I have no reason to think that they'll go back to where they were, I think managers will be incented to continue to issue CLOs.
Tom Shandell, Managing Director and Head of US Broadly Syndicated Loans and CLOs at Investcorp Credit Management. Thank you so much for joining the Real Prime Review and sharing your expertise with us.
Thanks for having me, Hugh.
This week saw a significant uptick in Chapter 11 cases, with 15 new debtors with liabilities over $10 million filing for Chapter 11 the past week, according to New York's First Aid database, including WAM SA, Converge One, and Acorda Therapeutics. Other in-court developments this week include the Wee Company, Wesco Aircraft, Best Wall, and Gull Air. Chilean mobile and broadband telecommunications provider WOM SA, formerly known as Nextel Chile SA, filed Chapter 11 in Delaware last Monday. The debtors have not proposed a definitive restructuring solution, but say that negotiations with stakeholders are underway and that liquidation is not on the table. At a first-day hearing on Tuesday, Judge Karen Owens approved WOM's $210 million new money DIP term loan facility from JP Morgan on an interim basis, making $100 million available. Before the filing, WOM rejected a competing DIP proposal from an ad hoc group of senior noteholders advised by Deckert and Ducera. The group, which represents more than half of WOM's bondholders, opposed the fees and sizing of JP Morgan DIP and the magnitude of the payments to critical foreign vendors, but Judge Owens largely overruled the objections. Technology services company Converge One Holdings entered Chapter 11 in the Southern District of Texas last Thursday, filing with a restructuring support agreement and prepackaged plan that would equitize or slash $1.6 billion in funded debt. The plan is supported by holders of approximately 81% of both first and second lien claims. Under the plan, first lien creditors can elect to receive either take-back exit term loans equal to 20% of their pre-petition first lien claims or take-back exit term loans equal to 15% of their pre-petition first lien claims and participation in a fully backstopped $159.25 million equity rights offering. Holders of the second lien claims would receive 4.375% of reorganized equity. The $159.25 million rights offering is part of a total $245 million equity rights offering to be offered at a 35% discount to an implied plan equity value of $434 million. Both the rights offering and second lien equity could be subject to dilution by a 10% management incentive plan. At a hearing on Thursday, Judge Christopher Lopez approved the proposed DIP financing on an interim basis, allowing the debtors to access a $250 million ABL DIP and secure a $215 million new money term DIP facility from first lien creditors. Under the interim DIP, the term DIP facility will be fully funded, but only a first draw of $145 million will be accessible. Some $70 million will be held in escrow and made available when the court enters a final DIP order. Accorda Therapeutics, a biopharmaceutical company that develops therapies for neurological disorders, filed for Chapter 11 in the Southern District of New York last Monday. Accorda seeks bankruptcy protection to run a Section 363 sale process after securing a pre-petition stalking horse bid offer from Merz Pharmaceuticals to acquire all the debtors' assets for approximately $185 million in cash. Debtors enter with an RSA with an ad hoc noteholder group holding more than 90% of the company's 6% convertible senior secured notes due 2024. The sole funded debt constituency, providing that notes claims would be paid from sales proceeds. Certain group members also agreed to provide $60 million in DIP financing consisting of $20 million in new money loans and a roll-up of $40 million of notes obligations. At Thursday's first day hearing, Judge David S. Jones' interim DIP approval unlocked $10 million of new money. On Tuesday, WeWork announced that it had determined a final pass forward at 90% of the locations in its global real estate portfolio through amended leases, new management agreements, or via the lease rejection process. The changes will reduce total future rent commitments by over $8 billion, or over 40%, according to the debtors. The Wesco and Cora debtors announced another postponement of their planned confirmation hearing, pushing back the start date by 1 month to May 16th from April 17th. Debtors also moved on Wednesday, April 3rd, to supplement the disclosure statement with revised versions of the valuation analysis, financial projections, and liquidation analysis, and disclose that on the plan effective date, they replaced their ABL facility with a new revolver facility assumed to be drawn at approximately $370 million. On March 28th, Judge Laura Beyer certified her ruling denying a motion to dismiss the Best Wall of Texas two-step Chapter 11, allowing for a direct appeal to the Fourth Circuit. If the Fourth Circuit exercises its discretion to accept the case, the appeal of the dismissal order would leapfrog the U.S. District Court and go straight to the Circuit Court. Judge Beyer said there is no controlling decision from the Fourth Circuit or the U.S. Supreme Court on the novel question presented by the Appealing Asbestos Claimants Committee, whether financial distress is a requirement for the debtor to be an eligible subject of bankruptcy pursuant to the Bankruptcy Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Gull Air's Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors and the U.S. Trustee asked Judge Martin Glenn to strike planned lockup provisions in the debtor's stipulations with AerCap and other aircraft lessors. The UCC suggests that Gull aims to lock up creditors' votes in response to the widely reported interest expressed by their competitor, Azul, to put in a bid to purchase the debtors. Gull could use the lockup provisions as a quasi-poison pill to thwart outside bidders and maintain majority shareholder Abra Group's control, the UCC says. Rivian Automotive, EchoStar Corp., T-Mobile US Inc., Mosaic, and Office Properties Income Trust ran out this week's crop of near-term restructurings and refinancings and other new advisor mandates. Rivian Automotive may face a liquidity shortfall in the back half of 2025, absent material improvement in its gross margin, according to analysis published by Reorg. In February, management said it was confident the company's existing cash and investments would be enough to fund its operations through 2025. However, in light of the company's heavy capital and operating expenses and current negative gross margin, avoiding a potential liquidity shortage next year would likely require an improvement in gross margin, substantial cuts to operating expenses, or a mix of both. To access Reorg's complete analysis of Rivian, please reach out to a Reorg representative. Last Tuesday, a source at EchoStar with knowledge of the situation confirmed that Dish Network Corp's option to purchase 800 MHz spectrum license from T-Mobile had expired. As noted in the company's 10-K, the option was scheduled to expire on Monday, April 1st at 11:59 p.m. Eastern. Mosaic, a loan issuer financing residential solar panel installations, is working with advisors to refinance near-term debt maturities. Elevated interest rates present challenges to Mosaic and its peers. An office properties income trust ad hoc group of bondholders organized with advisors ahead of maturities. The REIT has 3 million square feet of leases expiring in 2024, and management noted last month that challenges remain regarding its balance sheet. Top red stories this week included San Benito Healthcare District appeals Chapter 9 dismissal order, Medicare Advantage update, CMS finalizes Medicare Advantage rate, sparking decline in Humana, United Healthcare Centene, CVS equity market value, coverage denial risk heightened for care providers, Altus Francis Gibson Dunn Secured Group Ready's cooperation agreement. Kate Thomas is on vacation this week, so I'll be covering highlights of the week ahead. A longer schedule of the week's events can be found under America's Week Ahead on the Reorg website. This week of April 8th kicks off with day 20 of the Wesco and Cora trial challenging a 2022 up-tier transaction. The debtor's plan, which is premised on the validity of the 2022 transaction, is up for confirmation on May 16th. The court will also hear a disclosure statement supplement motion on Monday that provides revised versions of the debtor's financial projections, valuation, and liquidation analysis. Debtors continue their efforts at a global settlement, resolving the trial and plan negotiations through mediation before Judge Christopher Lopez. On Tuesday, we continue our coverage of the dramatic Baiju Alpha's case with the debtors pursuing fraudulent transfer litigation to recover $533 million of loan proceeds that are currently MIA. Debtors' discovery efforts thus far have been thwarted by uncooperative defendants. So uncooperative, in fact, that the court has entered a contempt orders and even an arrest warrant for a witness that has allegedly fled the country rather than appear before the court to testify. The court will hear a motion to dismiss the case from those very same defendants on Tuesday, as well as a motion to stay the orders pending their appeal. On Thursday, we turn our attention to Yellow's Chapter 11 case when the debtors will prosecute their objection to over $1 billion in Warnock liability claims. The debtor and official committee of unsecured creditors contend the proofs of claim filed by various unions and related pension health funds are either worthless or significantly overstated. Of course, the unions are pushing back, and if they're successful, their Warnock claims could materially affect unsecured claim recoveries in the case. On Friday, the Hornblower debtors are scheduled to seek conditional approval of their disclosure statement for the proposed plan that would equitize the first lien claims and capitalize the reorganized debtors through a $345 million rights offering. In connection with that rights offering, the debtors are also seeking approval of a backstop commitment agreement at Friday's hearing. The Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors has objected to the backstop, arguing that it only enriches the debtors' majority equity holder and sponsor, Crestview Partners, and pre-petition lender Strategic Value Partners, at the expense of the debtors' estates. In March, the committee announced that it's investigating Crestview's valuation of the debtors and pre-petition trading activity related to Hornblower's first lien claims. Thank you again for tuning in to the Reorg Primary Review and our weekly review. Find all our podcasts on the Reorg.com webinars and podcast page, as well as Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, and Amazon. Take care and see you all next week.